Rhonda Palmer, and my main claim to fame is my two daughters, who are, well, one is coordinating staff and one is at the PD staff, so I'm happy to be here this week, and also with my grandchildren. I'm a botanist by training, and I got interested in doing chocolate, well, in part because I like it, but also I was interested in economic botany, sort of plants that are grown and sold and used for food, and the little science museum in New Hampshire where we live asked if I would do a series on economic botany, and so the first one I did was chocolate. People loved it. You know, corn and wheat just doesn't attract the same audience as chocolate, so I kind of made chocolate my thing. And so you know that this is really scientific. I'm going to give you some numbers, because scientists like numbers. And if you look up Google, you get 746 million hits if you put in chocolate. And a year ago, you got about 150 million. So I'm not sure what happened in the meantime, but some chocolate really hit the Google market. If you do cocoa, you get 27 million. And cacao, which is the more the scientific name or the for cocoa, you get 38 million. And if you go on Amazon, there are 549,000 entries, 16,000 of which are books, 93,000 are gourmet food, which isn't so surprising. But 1,921 are pet supplies, and a good number of your pets, if they eat chocolate, get quite ill. It's not good for their hearts. But in all honesty, a lot of it is like chocolate lab, you know, things for your chocolate lab. So I don't think they're trying to kill your dog. 443 movies and 105 video games. And if I'm really going to be honest, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory comes up more than one time, so it isn't that there are that many. But the newest one is Operation Bitter Chocolate, which is a new video game from Japan. Anybody played it? I thought sure you would have. You're the chocolate expert.
I'm the youth. I'm the chocolate guy, but still, I have no idea what that is. Okay.
And just for good measure, a few more. 3.5 billion tons of beans are sold per year, and there was an expectation that 4.5 million would be sold in 2012. And for the most part, chocolate has been pretty recession resistant. But in this past year, when Europe has been having problems with their economy, they've actually been eating less chocolate. So there could be an excess on the market. And in the last few years, it's really been kind of a shortage.
Well, which is cause and which is effect?
Yeah.
the economic meltdown in Europe is because they're eating less chocolate.
Chocolate. That could be. I didn't even think of that. So eat chocolate. And there are 80 million Hershey kisses made each day. So, you know, if you had your Hershey kiss for the day, you've got to eat quite a few to maintain that. 40 to 50 million persons depend on cocoa production for a livelihood. 5 to 6 million of those are the farmers themselves. But there are a lot of people that are employed in the cocoa and chocolate market. It's about a $50 billion business worldwide, and about $18 billion in the U.S. We have a pretty good market. In the U.S., we average 11.64 pounds of chocolate per year at about $55 per person. Which country do you think eats more?
U.S.
No, U.S. is not the top one.
China?
No.
Netherlands.
Belgium.
Germany.
Switzerland
is the top one. They eat 22 pounds.
Oh, I thought you meant by like total, like poundage per country,
poundage per person. Yep. And Europe is a big chocolate person. Somebody said Belgium, Germany. Those are also big chocolate, but the Swiss eat the most. And I just thought you needed a few more numbers so you really know. 66% of chocolate is eaten between meals, and 22% gets eaten between 8 p.m. and midnight. So we're just eating it at the right time of the day. And of all the almond production, 40% goes into chocolate. and 20% of peanuts goes into chocolate. And we do have some chocolate with almonds, but none with peanuts. Peanuts is just a little bit flat for this event. So, 52% of Americans declare it's their favorite flavor.
Woohoo!
And the next highest is a tie between vanilla and fruit, and that's 12%. So chocolate really ranks up high in flavor. And 71% prefer milk chocolate, but that percentage is going down. That dark chocolate's becoming more popular.
Dark chocolate is better.
Yeah, right. Just keep saying it. Okay, so our plan for tonight is to look a little at the botany of chocolate, how chocolate's produced, the history of chocolate. Really, I should say cacao if I'm really going to do it correctly. Use the correct term, but I'm using chocolate in general. A little bit about chocolate and health, and then some of the social issues around chocolate, and then your taste. Because if I let you taste now, I might lose all of you before. So the botany of chocolate. The tree that we get cacao from is a tropical tree, and it's called Theobroma cacao, food of the gods. And Linnaeus named it, and Linnaeus is the Swede who developed the two scientific name system of genus and species, and he named it Theobroma cacao, and if Linnaeus names it, you don't change it. And it will have a little L after it, actually, so you know that don't tamper. It's from the Sturculaceae family, and Sturcus was the god of rot and dung. And that just doesn't seem to go with cocoa very much. But the family was not named after the cacao. It was named after Sturcus, which is a little bit more dung-like, and it can be used as a laxative. So, you know, the name is not so nice for chocolate. It grows in very specific conditions, 20 degrees north and south of the equator, at an elevation of 1,300 to 2,300 feet. So it's too high here, and it's too far from the equator. It grows best in a shaded understory, and in nature it grows in a shaded understory, and a temperature range of 70 to 85 degrees, and 70 to 90 inches of rain per year. So I think most of us don't live in a place where you can grow it in your backyard. And this shows where it's grown, and you can see it's not too far from the equator. Theobroma cacao is this tree in the understory, and the canopy there is Glericidium cepium, which is called Cacao de Madra, the mother of cocoa. The tree itself is evergreen. The leaves are oblong, 15 to 20 feet high, and in plantations, it would grow higher up in nature. It takes 5 years for it to mature. And so you could eat it because the tree is 5 years old before it produces fruit. It has a lifespan of 50 to 60 years, although not that long in the plantations. It has a characteristic of coliflory, which just means that the flowers grow on the trunk and the fruit grows on the trunk. It doesn't grow out on the ends of the branches. And the fruit is a berry. And the berry just means it has lots of seeds in it. So that things that we call berries, like strawberries, are not really berries. Tomatoes are berries, botanically. And in a year, 30 to 40 fruits are produced on a tree. And there you see how they grow on the trunk of a tree. The flowers are very small. They're about the size of a dime. They're white with red streaks. And this big thing you see here is actually just a ligule. It's a specialized leaf, but it's not really part of the flower. And the flower itself is about the size of a dime. So when you think of the size of the flower compared to that big fruit it produces, it seems a little strange. And they get produced year-round, just like citrus trees that can have blossoms and fruit at the same time. This is the same kind of characteristic. But each one of these flowers lasts only for one day, and they actually are only viable for pollination for a few hours in the morning. So only about 1 to 5% actually produce fruits. So most of these flowers just bloom and never get develop into fruits. And that's a real concern, that the flowers actually get pollinated. But you can imagine if they're only ready for pollination for a few hours in the morning, that pollinator has to be there at the right time. And for a long time, it was not certain what the pollinator was. And it turns out it's a little midge, kind of like a little gnat. And it lives in the duff on the bottom of, the tree, forest floor. And if you have a plantation and keep it nice and neat and clean, there's nothing for those midges to reproduce in. And so you don't get very much pollination. And they tried stingless bees, but stingless bees are actually too big to actually get in there and do the pollination. And in some places they hand pollinate, and they're actually, there's a nonprofit group that's working with cacao farmers to train them how to better hand pollinate. But you know, and in some places they put banana leaves underneath the trees to make a better home for the midges. But midges bite, which is not so pleasant. Okay, so then those flowers that do get pollinated develop into a fruit that's about 10 inches long. So it's kind of like a football. So you got this little tiny flower that develops this great big fruit that takes 5 to 7 months to produce. So there seems to be a little incongruency with the flower and the fruit. And there are about 20 to 30 seeds inside the this football-like fruit. And there's a white pulp around it. And it's a, I've read that it's like a mild lemon taste. But we don't really harvest the pulp. And the fruit does not fall from the tree. It has to be picked. And part of that is that in the part of the world where it would, where it grows, if it fall to, if it would fall to the ground, it would be, it would rot fairly quickly. And so the tree, if it, this fruit it germinates there, there'd be a lot of seeds in one place, and so the tree would not really do well. But so in nature, animals, particularly monkeys, eat them, and they don't eat the seed themselves. They just eat the sweet pulp around, and it goes through the their digestive system without breaking open. And so then they would transport it into other parts of the forest. And there's not much desire to eat that fruit because it's, or the seed, because it's bitter. And also, if I'm not sure, but if monkeys are like dogs, it's probably not too good for them to eat the seed. And this is just a picture of the pulp on the seeds, and then the seeds without the pulp. And there are three varieties that are common. And one is Criollo. And 5 to 10% of the production is Criollo. And that's the best chocolate. It grows only in Central America. But it's also very susceptible to fungi or fungus infections. And so it's not as easy to grow. Forasteros is 80% of the chocolate we get. And it's more bitter and more acidic. But it's also more hardy. It's more resistant to fungal diseases. And so the crops that are raised in Africa and Indonesia are Forasteros. Trinitario, about 10 to 15%. And it's a cross between the Criollo and Forasteros that is, was first discovered in Trinidad. And I think it's at a time when the Criollo had almost died out, and the Forasteros formed a hybrid. So it's really a hybrid. The Nacional is a fairly recent find, and it's a white mutant cocoa bean. And it's not the white chocolate we're going to eat. And they think it originally was in Ecuador, because Ecuador has some of the finest chocolate anywhere, cacao. And but somehow it turned up in Peru recently, and it's a white mutant bean, but I don't know if any is really marketed. So how do we get from that cocoa bean to chocolate? And the beans themselves are produced in the Ivory Coast, Indonesia, and Brazil in largest number. And Brazil is really only the only place on this list that's actually a native, where it's a native plant. The rest have been moved by humans to those parts of the world. And but the best cacao is in Central and South America. I should have said that before we got to this slide. But. So the process. The harvesting, fermenting, and the dry that's up there in the yellow, that's actually done on site where the cacao trees grow. And the rest is usually done someplace else, largely the U.S. and Europe. And more of the money comes out of these things in the white boxes. The yellow boxes, the people don't make as much money. The harvesting has to be done by hand, and it's cut with a machete off the trunk. And you have to be careful so you don't stir too many flowers at the same time. And they do it twice a year to avoid damaging the flowers all the time. And if, and then they're cut open, and somebody who's really good can cut them off and open them up 500 in an hour. And then they're fermented, and the pulp around them provides good sugar for enhancing the fermentation process. And it's usually done with putting banana leaves around over the top of them, and the anaerobic bacteria do the fermenting process. And the one thing it does is it kills the embryo, so then these seeds will not germinate. Otherwise, you ship them across the ocean to be processed, and they're going to start to grow. And it also starts the transformation of the polyphenols into what we think of as the odor and taste chocolate. And then you dry them, and you get down to about 7% water and before they're shipped. Sometimes they're sorted on site, because if you sort and you have the best beans separated from the not so good beans, you get a better price for them. But when you move to largely Europe or the US, they're roasted. And the roasting process is what really develops the smell and taste of chocolate. So if it's not roasted, you might not recognize it so much as chocolate or cocoa. And the winnowing process is simply removing the husks from those beans. And if you buy cocoa hull mulch, that's what you're getting, is the outside shell. If they left those underneath the trees and the plantation, it would actually be better for the pollination. So then you have the roasted bean without the hull, and then you do the grinding process. The traditional way was on a metate, which is just a stone and kind of like a rolling pin that would grind the cocoa bean. And
like they do corn for tortillas.
Yeah, exactly. And you grind it, and when you've ground it, what you have is chocolate liqueur. And it's not like liquor, it's not alcoholic, it's just what the name given to when you grind up the beans. And they that's like baking chocolate kind of substance. And if then you have the possibility of pressing it and separating the cocoa from the cocoa butter. And the cocoa still has some cocoa butter in it, but the cocoa butter is basically what you get with white chocolate with a little sugar and milk added to it. But if you want to make what we think of as chocolate, you grind it, and then you conch it. Conching is a mixing process, and at the same time you add the sugar or other ingredients that you want to add. And the friction of mixing from like minimum 72 hours to 6 days, you get a smoother product. And the crystals of the sugar dissolve. Yes?
Isn't there one exception to that?
What would that be?
Mexican chocolate? Don't they do that for less?
The Mexican chocolate is ground and it's not conched. You're right.
Or if it is, it's like done for like a single hour.
Yeah, it's ground and with the sugar, and it's good. It's you can get the little sugar granules. You can really taste separately.
I've had it.
Yeah,
I actually kind of.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
If you don't need that nice smooth texture, it's pretty good. And then tempering is a change in temperature, you heat it up, cool it down, heat it up, and cool it down. And that keeps the cocoa butter and the cocoa in suspended, and so that it has a nice smooth texture and it snaps nicely. A good quality chocolate will snap. And when you leave chocolate in warm weather or cold weather, or it'll turn white sometimes, and all that means is that this conching process has been reversed and the cocoa butter's coming to the top. And it doesn't mean that there's anything really wrong with the chocolate, but it doesn't have the same snap and smoothness. And then if you want to, you can shape it into various things, Easter bunnies or whatever you like. And here are just a few pictures of what I was talking about. There's the man with the machete cutting these open, putting the beans in the pot. And there's just bringing the beans in. That's the fermentation process. Here's the drying process and sorting. Okay, so, and just some terms. The chocolate liqueur is like baking chocolate, just the ground up beans. The cocoa butter, about 55% of chocolate liqueur is fat. And the thing that's a little different about cocoa butter is that it melts just below body temperature. So it melts fairly quickly in your mouth if you have nice quality chocolate, and it is actually has cocoa butter in it. It also doesn't get rancid very fast. I mean, if you've had chocolate for quite a long time, it might get white and look funny, but it doesn't have a bad taste. And it is white chocolate. Cocoa has 50% of the fat removed, and chocolate has added ingredients. And that just gives you a little idea. If you've got bitter chocolate, it's almost all chocolate liqueur with a little extra cocoa butter in it. No milk, no sugar. Bittersweet, you add a little more sugar. Sweet, you add a lot more sugar. And milk chocolate, you add sugar and milk solids. A little bit of history of chocolate. It's probably been a food since about 500 BCE.
What?
5,000. Did I say
500?
Oh, 5,000, excuse me. Thank you for that correction. It's quite a bit of difference in time. It's thought that the Amazonians used the pulp only, not the seeds. And I don't really know what the evidence for that is, but it's thought that the Amazonians, and that's where they think it came from and then spread in other parts of Central America. The Olmecs actually used the beans, 400 BCE. And that they know from residue in pottery, that there was actually ground up beans. But the Mayans started farming it. And they also have art that shows, here you see the cacao tree with the beans off, or the pods off from it. But it was the Aztecs who really had a chocolate culture, or a cacao culture. And they considered cacao really a gift of the god. And I'm not sure if Linnaeus knew this or exactly why he came up with that name, but the Aztecs certainly saw it as a gift from the god. Mm-hmm. And there, a lot of their art has images of the cacao bean or the plant. And in some places that's identified as Mayan, in some places Aztec, but more often Aztec, so what a little truth in advertising here. And it was used as currency for the Aztecs. For it was actually in Mexico was accepted for paying your taxes until 1877. And to buy an avocado, a tomato, something like that was about one bean. So that was pretty inexpensive. You could buy a slave for 100 beans, and a rabbit cost about 10 beans, and a prostitute cost 10 beans. So, it was a common use in currency for quite a long time. But it was used only as a beverage. It was not eaten like we eat chocolate. And it was a beverage that was eaten mainly by the wealthy class, not by the poor people. They wouldn't grind up for 40 beans to make a cup, and they could buy that many beans. But Montezuma is said to have drunk 50 cups a day. And so we had people who were grinding the beverage. They grind the beans and stir it with water and spices. No sugar. It was not sweet. It was bitter and spicy. If the poor people used it at all as a food, they would mix it with cornmeal. So it was kind of a mush. So it was a little bit of flavor. And you had to mix it make it as smooth as possible, and make it foamy, or you'd pour it from one container to the other to make it foamy and pleasant to drink. But it was also, it was not hot. It was also symbolic for the heart and blood. And so sometimes cacao was offered to the gods kind of as a blood offering. And that is the sort of very artistic molinillo, which was used for mixing up the beverage. I don't think your ordinary person had that kind of thing. And they gave the name chocolate. And it probably comes from the Aztec word meaning bitter water. All right, then Columbus in 1502 actually saw cacao beans, and he was given some cacao beans, but he didn't really appreciate that they were of much value. And but he did notice that when cocoa beans were dropped or something, people would go after them and seemed to put quite a lot of value in, but he didn't see them as very valuable. And he actually brought some back to Spain, but there was no interest in it. But then Cortez came, you know, 45 years later, and the Aztecs looked upon Cortez as the white god, gave him a cacao plantation, but he sold the cocoa beans for gold. He kind of didn't think the cacao bean was all that great, but he did bring it back to Europe, to Spain, and Spain actually had cacao for 100 years before anybody else in Europe had it. It was their secret, and it was medicinal, but they did add sugar and to make a different kind of beverage. And so for 100 years, they kept it just for themselves. And but then it kind of took Europe by storm. And there's one story of British pirates actually stealing a Spanish ship in order to get cacao. And when it did come to Europe and be more widespread, it was the first stimulant drink, non-alcoholic, in Europe. Coffee came later than cacao. And it was largely aristocratic, and people had very special dishes that they used for their cocoa drink. And in France, women could drink it, but in Britain, they could not. It was too much of an aphrodisiac for women to have. There was a big debate in the church whether or not you could drink it before you came to take the Eucharist. And finally, they decided it was okay. It wasn't really a food. It could be drunk, and so they would bring their cocoa in their fancy containers to Mass. So in 1585, the first shipment came to Europe. And it was 100 years later before all of Europe got it. And in the 1800s is when cocoa really became popular in Europe. And Van Houten developed the Dutching process. Because if you try to take some like organic cocoa and mix it with water, it doesn't really mix all that readily. But and I always thought Dutch chocolate was this sort of really special, a little bit more special. But actually, they just add alkali to it, and that makes it go into solution more readily. But it doesn't really make it a better product. But it made it mixing it much easier. And it was Fry in 1849 actually started making chocolate you could eat, started making a solid chocolate bar. And in 1874, Meunier started the Chocolate Village. And it was I think when we think about company towns, we think of it as something where the workers have been mistreated. But Menier really started something very new. He provided housing for his workers, he provided health care for his workers, he provided education for the children of the workers, and Hershey in the U.S. followed that same pattern. So early years of chocolate industry in Europe, it was really quite progressive for the workers. And it was Nestle who first added milk to chocolate, which might have been not such a good term, but it depends on which you prefer. And Lindt developed the conching method where you had the very nice smooth chocolate that snapped. And when all of this chocolate industry started, there was a much greater demand for chocolate. And the Europeans wanted sugar with their chocolate as well. So it really led to sugar plantations and cacao plantations in the Caribbean. And then it moved to Africa, and the Dutch took it to Indonesia, and because that was a climate where it could be grown. So now most of the chocolate is grown in other parts of the world than Central America. And it also increased the slavery industry, or I don't call it an industry, but the institution of slavery, because you had these plantations that needed workers. And so, although it started out probably in the Amazon and moved up into the rest of Central America, then into the Caribbean, and then into Africa, and finally into Indonesia. And Africa and Indonesia are now the big producers of cacao, not the chocolate. So if you're eating chocolate, if you have quality chocolate, you should have between 56 to 70% cacao solids, and 30, which should be at least 31% cocoa butter, 29 to 43% sugar, some lecithin. Lecithin is a natural ingredient that is a kind of an emulsifier, helps keep it a little smooth, and pure vanilla extract. If you're buying, you know, probably the Hershey Kiss, it's probably 11% cacao solids, 3% vegetable fat, doesn't melt at body temperature like cocoa butter does, 20% milk solids, 65% sugar, some lecithin and synthetic vanilla. So there is a difference. And there you get a little bit of an idea. So as you move from the bitter chocolate to milk chocolate, the amount of carbohydrate definitely goes up. The protein is best in bitter chocolate, and so are the minerals. I don't think we eat too much chocolate to get minerals, but there are some. Okay, so let's look at chocolate health. Some health myths. And if you're younger, maybe you didn't grow up so much with the idea that you should never eat chocolate because it gives you acne. But certainly in my generation, no chocolate if you didn't want to have acne. But studies done at the Air Force Academy and Pennsylvania State indicate there's really no relationship between chocolate and acne. So, anyway. Allergies, there are people who say they're allergic to chocolate, but it's very rare to even people who say they're allergic when they actually tested for true immunological change. People aren't, it's rare to be allergic to chocolate. And if you are, it's more likely that you're allergic to the milk in the milk product than you are or the nuts that are put into the chocolate. And you might be intolerant. It might bother your gut a bit, but not, it's unlikely that you're allergic. Another is that it gives you cavities. Of course, anything with a lot of sugar is not going to be too great for your teeth. But the tannins and the cocoa butter in chocolate actually tends to coat your teeth and protect it from the sugar. So, right. So it's probably not the main.
Good, another excuse to get my mom to have me eat chocolate.
right before bed.
Migraines. There's been a lot of study with migraines because a number of people feel like it's a trigger for migraines. But because there often is a craving for chocolate somehow with before migraines. But whether you eat the chocolate or eat carob, it makes no difference. It doesn't seem to really trigger them. You might have a craving, but there doesn't seem to be a real triggering of migraines. Obesity, well, you know, if you eat chocolate in huge quantities, it's probably not going to be the best. But a good, not a chocolate bar like that, but you know, one that's about a third that size, has about 170 calories. And a big Whopper has 750, so it's not as high calorie, especially if you eat the bitter chocolate. And we just saw that it had a lot of minerals, and it had protein. It's definitely not empty calories. And you will live longer. There was a study done at Harvard with 7,800 graduates that they did surveys, and if you ate chocolate 3 times a month, you lived 3 months longer.
You!
That's really
one
good.
More thing in my arsenal of excuses to eat chocolate.
Yes, you're going to live much longer. So are there any health benefits? Now that we said those things were not so accurate. There are many chemicals, over 300 chemicals in cacao. So exactly what things are doing good things for you or not, is they've not all been tested. There is theobromine. Theobromine is related to caffeine. And theobromine is also a stimulant. It's a bronchodilator, but it's a much weaker stimulant than caffeine. And there are really arguments whether there's any caffeine in chocolate. The caffeine is in the hull, and you take that off. But there can be some transformation of theobromine to caffeine. Sometimes caffeine's added to chocolate in some cases, but that's pretty rare. But you get about 10 milligrams per ounce of chocolate, and you get 150 in a cup of coffee. So they're even with, and that's on the high end of measurement of how much caffeine there is in chocolate. But there are many antioxidants, flavanols and polyphenols, and those are protectants. They are, antioxidants are, well, at first, when you chemical reactions in the body produce oxygen radicals that are high energy and can be damaging. But the body actually uses some of those radicals, like in white blood cells, to actually kill bacteria and things of that sort. So you actually need a few free radicals moving around. But there's oxygen radicals are damaging in high quantities, and so an antioxidant will remove some of those from your body. So when you talk about anti-aging and things you want, that's the antioxidants. The old measurement for antioxidant content is the oxygen radical acceptance compound capacity. It's not a term that the FDA is using anymore because it's too general. It's saying it's a little bit like saying minerals compared to what an actual mineral. But dark chocolate has a very high number of antioxidants, but it's a little bit of a general term. But it has flavanols and polyphenols that are good antioxidants. But see, milk chocolate doesn't have quite as many. And you know, blueberries aren't on this list even, or red wine's not on the list either. So, but one of the problems in the processing of chocolate is that you destroy some of these antioxidants if you heat the temperature too high or you're not careful. But Mars Company has actually worked very hard to develop a method that maintains as many antioxidants as possible. And it's called process is called CocoPro. And if you look at Dove the Dove bars, they actually actually are developed, are use the cocoa pearl process to get more antioxidants in Duff bars than in some chocolates. Okay, so phenylethylamine. Phenylethylamine is kind of what gives the aphrodisiac reputation for chocolate, and it is sometimes called the love drug or something of that sort. But there's really quite a bit more in cheddar cheese and salami than there's
in
which we all know it's alanamine is an amine that attaches to the same receptors as marijuana, so that it does give you a little bit of a high. Unfortunately, you'd have to eat 25 pounds of chocolate to get as much as in one joint of marijuana. But there are compounds in chocolate that make the effect last longer. So, it isn't without its happiness, relaxing capacity. Cocoa butter, one of its main acids is stearic acid, which in the liver becomes a monounsaturated fat, which is like olive oil and things that are good for you. So cocoa butter fits in that category. And cocoa butter also, good for your skin and makes you heal and all those things. So it's very good. Okay, what about cravings? Women crave chocolate more than men. American Caucasian women crave chocolate more than Latinos. So why that is, I don't know. But there is some hormone relationship. There are some plant hormones, plant estrogens that are in chocolate. How high those quantities are, I don't really know. addictions. You might think you're addicted to chocolate if you want to have some every day, but there are no physiological effects. You aren't going to have DTs if you quit eating your chocolate. And you won't even get headaches. So addictions to chocolate are more psychological than physiological. And as far as cravings are concerned, if you give somebody just cocoa powder or some kind of other placebo, it doesn't satisfy their craving. Milk chocolate satisfies chocolate craving the most, and it tends to melt the most quickly. And so it seems to be more the feeling in your mouth as much as the chemicals that are in the chocolate. A few more things on the antioxidant kind of thing. It also keeps your platelets from clumping, a little like aspirin. So, very good for your health. And there was a recent study done in Linköping, Sweden. I have to admit there were, I think, 18 subjects. But
did you know all that?
And some of them were given chocolate, I think 70 milligrams. And others were given a placebo. And it actually decreased their angiotensin tensin 2 levels, which is the increases your blood pressure, by 37%. So there really was a drop in blood pressure from these 18. So, I think you don't really need any blood pressure medicine. You don't take an aspirin. Okay, so issues around chocolate. Unfortunately, there probably haven't been enough health studies done, but most of them actually indicate that there's that it's not detrimental to eat chocolate. It's probably not going to be the cure-all. The other thing about the studies is that they're usually sponsored and paid for by the chocolate industry. which doesn't mean they're bad, but there might
might be a bit of bias.
That would mean it is slightly biased.
You think so?
To the chocolate companies, given they're probably just trying to get it out there as like, our product is healthy.
That's right.
Reality. Half fat.
There's been a huge increase in luxury chocolates. You can buy chocolates that are, I mean, traditionally chocolate has been a mixture of beans, but now you can get Grand Cru chocolate. So they, all the beans come from Ecuador or Panama or Madagascar, and it means that you pay a little bit more for the chocolate, and some people say they can really tell the difference in flavor. Because of the way cacao is grown in many plantations where we don't have the same shaded overstory or canopy, the trees are very susceptible to disease, and so a lot of pesticides and things are traditionally used, and so it's not the best for the environment. But there's considerable work being done to raise cacao in a more environmentally friendly way, growing more shade-grown cacao. And the other advantage is that then the farmers are not totally dependent on cacao, but they can have bananas that are producing the shade cover, or other nut trees, or other things that, so they have a varied income stream. The other problem with chocolate is that, the cacao, is that there's been a lot of concern about child slavery in the raising of chocolate. Because, especially in the Ivory Coast, where the, 70% of our cocoa comes from, there have been boys in particular from Mali and surrounding countries that are brought there to work on these plantations in not safe conditions. I mean, you can imagine going out with machetes, cutting down the fruit and breaking them open, and that it's hard labor. And it's tricky because in a traditional farming culture, children would be working on the farm with the family. That's the way it would be done. And so if you've got some extra children around, it's a little hard to say, no, they're not, you know, those are slaves, they're not your children. So it's not straightforward, easy to find. But the BBC, I think in 2000, did a documentary on this problem of child slavery in the cacao industry. And so Hargan and Engel, a senator and representative, tried to get a bill through Congress that would try and change that so that chocolate companies would buy cacao beans that had been raised in much without child labor and in safe conditions. And there was so much pressure from the cacao industry, the chocolate industry, then they said, we will change this on our own. It will be an industry effort. And so they came up with the Hargan Engel Protocol. And I think the first deadline was like 2005. And now the most recent one is 2014, that they'll have at least 70% of cacao raised in better working conditions. The ICI is the International Chocolate Institute, and they were a part of this Hargan Engel Protocol. And it turned out that one employee was in the Ivory Coast, supposedly monitoring the child labor. But you can buy fair-traded chocolate or organic chocolate, and I think most of what we have over there, except for the Hershey bars, are fair-trade chocolate that's sold in the bookstore here. And so it's, look for that, for the fair-trade. So there gets to be more pressure. The World Cocoa Foundation actually is working on environmental things, better conditions for working on the production of chocolate. So, and it's a pretty huge part of the economy. And what would be better is if more of the money went to the poor cocoa farms that are raising it and less went to the chocolate companies. There are some more books that, if you're interested in reading some, I didn't bring them along because they're a little heavy to haul across the country. But there are also a number, candyusa.org. Actually, it has a lot of good information about chocolate. Any questions, comments?
Yeah.
Wasn't there some study done to show, like, something involving dark chocolate and academic performance?
Gee, I didn't see that.
Because, for some reason, I don't know if this is just a good excuse to eat chocolate, but...
it could be, but...
Some of the parents said this. So, I'm on one of my school's math competition teams. And every time before we go to a competition, every single one of us eats dark chocolate.
Well, the dark chocolate actually dilates your arterioles. It makes a nitrous oxide in your blood vessels, and so it dilates your blood vessels, so you probably have better blood flow going to your brain. Yes.
Did you ever make chocolate without the cocoa butter?
No. It would be drier than cocoa.
Okay. Yeah. I had somebody tell me that was a sign that the finest chocolate was chocolate without cocoa butter in it, but I've never seen that. I didn't know if it exists.
Well, you can have Mars makes a Circo and what is it called? It's another that you can buy that it would not probably have Circo and Cocoa Villa, and they're just the cocoa flavanols, vitamin C, and a very small amount of fat. It has 30 calories, but it's more of like a supplement. It's not really a pleasurable thing. It's, yeah. Okay. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it. Okay.
Do you want to pass it over now?
Yes.
So we have a few things for you to taste, and then you can buy some if you would like. Oh, I forgot to say anything about cocoa nibs. The cocoa nibs is the, just one moment. The cocoa nibs are the beans that have been roasted and before you grind them. So after you winnow them, take them off the hulls, that's a cocoa nib. And you can buy them now quite readily, just plain nibs that have been roasted, and you use them in cooking in particular. You can also buy them chocolate covered to cook espresso beans. And if you, as a real health thing, you can buy them unroasted. But if they're not roasted, and if they're not fermented, which is the natural thing, it's not going to taste too chocolate. So this is one with cocoa nibs in it. So it should have a little crunchy, more bitter nib in it. Yes.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I saw you consulting like a booklet of some sort.
Oh, that was just my notes. Okay. Yeah, I forget the numbers sometimes. Here's some white chocolate.
This one has nuts, so this is a milk chocolate with almonds. And you can compare that to a Hershey's with almonds.
And this is a 85% dark chocolate. I think that's the darkest one we have. And here are Dove bars that you know have a lot of antioxidants in them.
I think there are enough to be maybe split one.
Any other questions? Yes.
Can I say you mentioned at one point some connections with coffee. Mm-hmm. But it seems like the coffee story could mirror this in a lot of ways.
It can.
Plantations
can.
And the difference between and the farmer and the versus the production.
It's very similar. Very similar. Coffee grows in a few more places. But again, where it's grown and where it's roasted and sold is different. Yes?
Yet another concern of global climate change. Mm-hmm. Are the cacao trees in danger?
I don't know that. They're not
hotter.
Yeah. They are very sensitive to temperature change. So if it gets too hot, they're not going to do well. But I haven't heard much.
Should we start farming in Canada?
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Yeah. Did someone in here see the movie Tapped? Do we have any long-termers that you saw the movie Tapped? Is it the Hershey Company that does all the...
Nestle.
the Nestle company. Mm-hmm. And Nestle has connections to chocolate.
Oh, yes, yes.
Just want to bring awareness to you that Nestle is highly involved in kind of moving into small towns and pulling out all the water. And their practices are kind of frowned upon. And something to look up, just making the connection to chocolate. If you're going to buy chocolate, maybe you can choose where you're going to put your dime and give it to companies that have good practices. But I'll let you do your own research, but that was something that was brought to my attention a couple weeks ago.
Well, Nestle doesn't have a very good reputation with infant formula in developing countries to discourage breastfeeding either.
Another reason not to shop with Nestle.
But there was a reason not to eat Hershey's a while back, and I don't know if it's because of contaminated air or something, or politically.
It was labor practice.
And Hershey's has been the most resistant in giving money to this protocol so the chocolate company would agree to be careful about their sources. And Hershey has been the most resistant to that.
So it was the labor practice, it's not the...
Yeah, I think it's the labor practice. It could be something else, but I know the labor practice.
Just a public service announcement.
Very good.
Hershey's, just to make you people who haven't met that stuff yet, Hershey's does, in fact, have an edible form of wax as one of their preservatives. Wax.
Wax is something that they have to make older.
I doubt.
And now, if you'd like, you can go buy some of what you want.
Why is none of this chocolate reaching the front row?
Well, if you're willing to speak, because I wanted to say that out loud too.